We will bring in the military if needed. People say, oh, that's so terrible. He's going to bring in. It's been used many times over the years.
No, it actually hasn't been done many times over the years. It is terrible.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
But you're terrible.
I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the airwaves and the internets around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me. From bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us for another thrilling edition of The Bradcast, your smart show amid unspeakably stupid times. And since it's another day that ends in Y today, well, it turns out we got a lot to cover somehow, including, well, presuming I don't run over time, Desi Doyen and our latest Green News Report. Hi,
yeah,
Des.
I know. We got a 10-pound show in a 1-pound bag.
Something like that. The summer of outrageous flooding continues across the U.S. and elsewhere. Across the planet, and as the Trump administration is raising your prices for energy by gutting renewable energy production in the U.S., even as the administration is announcing plans to build a nuclear energy plant on the moon.
Taxpayer dollars at work.
You'll have all of that for us later this hour. But I do need to begin with a correction today to something that I said on yesterday's broadcast. As longtime listeners know, when we screw up, we like to put our corrections right up front as soon as possible, rather than burying it at the back of the show, as so many others do, if they even bother to issue corrections at all. So, in my coverage on Monday of the shooting at the CDC headquarters in Atlanta late on Friday by a man who had bought into mis- and disinformation regarding the COVID vaccine, which Donald Trump's health secretary, Bobby Kennedy Jr., has famously been sharing for years, this misinformation, the shooter believed that he had been harmed by the COVID vaccine and that he was suffering from depression that was caused by it. Last week, Bobby Kennedy, now that he's in control of the nation's health apparatus, such as the CDC and the National Institutes of Health, which are all part of the Department of Health and Human Services that he heads up, well, he announced the astounding cancellation of some $500 million in grants for the development of mRNA vaccines, such as the one for COVID that brought us out of the years-long pandemic, saving millions of lives across the globe in the bargain, and that he was stopping all new research on that newer mRNA vaccines for COVID, influenza, and many other diseases, including, by the way, cancer, which might be prevented by the use of this new mRNA technology. Instead of supporting that research, RFK Jr. is canceling that critical research. And instead of informing Americans about the truth regarding infectious diseases and vaccines to prevent them, Bobby Kennedy is misinforming the public about all of that, claiming, for example, that the COVID vaccine and the other mRNA vaccines are not effective against respiratory diseases. All stuff and nonsense. We spoke with Erin Melton Backus about all of this on yesterday's broadcast. She was fired from her job as a career non-political communications specialist at the CDC, along with hundreds of thousands of others who were fired by the Trump administration after his second term began. She and other former CDC officials are still fighting those firings. They're calling now for RFK Jr. to resign after the shooting on Friday, following his misinformation on vaccines and the fact that it took 18 hours before Kennedy even bothered to put out a tepid public statement about the attempted mass murders on Friday at the CDC headquarters in Atlanta. So if you missed that show, you can, of course, download it for free at bradblog.com or your favorite podcast site. Thanks to those of you who hit one of those donate options at bradblog.com to keep our work free for all. Thanks in advance. So as to the correction, in covering that story yesterday, we played this clip from former U.S. Surgeon General Dr. Jerome Adams.
How you respond to a crisis defines a leader. And quite frankly, Secretary Kennedy has failed in his first major test in this regard. It took him over 18 hours to issue a tepid response to these horrific shootings. And that's not even considering how his inflammatory rhetoric in the past has actually contributed to a lot of what's been going on.
So pretty damning commentary there from Dr. Adams, former U.S. Surgeon General. He also went on to charge that Kennedy's cancellation of the mRNA vaccine research was almost inexplicable and a huge mistake for public health. So where is the correction needed? Well, I said that Dr. Jerome Adams, the former U.S. Surgeon General, was the former U.S. Surgeon General under Joe Biden. In fact, Adams was Donald Trump's U.S. Surgeon General during his first term. It was Donald Trump's own Surgeon General calling out Robert F. Kennedy Jr. for his failure as the leader of the Department of Health and Human Services, which oversees some 13 major divisions, including the CDC, the NIH, the FDA, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, etc. It was Donald Trump's Surgeon General calling out this madness, not Joe Biden's former Surgeon General, but Donald Trump's. As I said on yesterday's show, my apology for that error.
And that was entirely my fault, well, so my apologies to you for that.
No, no, it's all right. It's my job to fact check you. Anyway, I wanted to set that record straight. And in a follow-up to that story, some of which broke shortly after we got off the air from yesterday's show, the 30-year-old man identified by authorities as Patrick Joseph White, who opened fire at the CDC headquarters last week, killing a police officer, died by suicide, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation said on Tuesday. It had not been previously known if he had killed himself or if he had been killed by a responding officer. The quote, evidence in this event indicates that the shooter had recently verbalized thoughts of suicide, which even led to law enforcement being contacted several weeks prior to the incident, said Chris Hosey, the GBI's director. I will also note that the Trump administration and the Republicans of Congress have gutted programs for mental health, for the mentally ill since taking office in Trump's second term, despite some of those programs being enacted following previous mass shootings for which Republicans are willing to blame only mental illness without doing anything, you know, directly about gun safety. The GBI's Chris Hosey also said that authorities had recovered, quote, written documentation that expressed the shooter's discontent with the COVID-19 vaccinations. They received those notes from the man's home. A neighbor of the man previously told NBC that the shooter had expressed anti-vaccine sentiments to her on multiple occasions. It was also previously reported that the shooter blamed the COVID-19 vaccine for making him depressed and suicidal. His father, as it turns out, had tried to contact police. He was worried that his son might be involved with the shootings, but apparently nobody called the father back. All of that is part of why Fired But Fighting, the coalition of fired HHS employees and allies, and our guest yesterday, Aaron Melton Backus, is a founding member, said in their statement last week that RFK Jr. was, quote, directly responsible for the villainization of CDC's workforce through his continuous lies about science and vaccine safety, which have fueled a climate of hostility and mistrust, unquote. The group added, quote, we don't need thoughts and prayers. We need an administration that does not villainize federal workers who are just trying to do their job. We need a Health and Human Services secretary who does not promote misinformation, about science and vaccines, unquote. But on top of that, the GBI director, Chris Hosey, confirmed on Tuesday that the shooter in this case fired nearly 200 rounds of ammunition at the headquarters of the CDC, shattering or putting holes into some 150 windows at the CDC headquarters before authorities would eventually recover five guns and over 500 shell casings from the scene. Yeah, he might have been able to fire 500 bullets in the time that it took police to respond and or for the man to eventually take his own life. It is a miracle that more were not injured or killed from that shooting. But that is what you get when you allow the unfettered sale of semi-automatic weapons that are suited for war, not for self-protection, and the unlimited supplies of ammunition. The shooting at CDC came after a slew of other high-profile shootings across the country in recent weeks. 2 weeks ago, a gunman entered a high-rise office building in Midtown Manhattan, killed three civilians and a police officer. 2 days before the shooting at the CDC, an active duty soldier shot up Fort Stewart in Georgia also, wounding five service members. And on Monday, just before our show yesterday, three people, including a child, were killed outside of a Target store in Austin, Texas. As we go to air, Donald Trump, who has no problem commenting on just about everything and everybody on his failing social media site, has said absolutely nothing about the shooting at the CDC headquarters in Atlanta, a largely glass building which is now riddled with bullet holes in about 150 windows that will need to be replaced, and where so many people could have been killed but miraculously were not. RFK Jr. posted several photos from a fishing trip in Montana before he finally got around to responding to the shooting by a man who happened to share his false beliefs about vaccines. 18 hours after the shooting, that's when we finally heard from Kennedy. But Donald Trump, that's better than Trump. He hasn't said a word since the shooting on Friday evening, almost 5 days ago now. And yet, despite all of that, despite all of the mass shootings in recent weeks, Donald Trump is busy pretending to be concerned about law and order and the rule of law for some reason. Pretending. He does not actually give a damn about it, no matter how many U.S. military troops he deploys, likely unlawfully, against Americans on American streets. More on that in a moment. But I want to do something which I normally do not do, which is to play this full story that Rachel Maddow led with on her show on Monday night, because it is a harrowing story that I had not heard and that I think you should know about. But I really can't do a better job in telling the story than she does. So, well, as mentioned, it's a bit of a harrowing, a bit of a crime story, which we do not normally cover on this show. And it's a bit longer than something that I would usually run in full on this show. But, well, give it a listen and we will talk about it on the other side.
So it was the summer of 2016. It was June 2016. And it was a terrible crime. It happened in a small legal office that specialized in real estate and in immigration matters. At this little legal office, somebody saw smoke coming out of the stairwell at that office. They called the fire department. Firefighters showed up and they did what brave firefighters do. They charged right into that burning building. Firefighters immediately found the source of the fire. Somebody had made a big pile of books and papers from that office and lit them all on fire. They also found a person. They found a man lying on the floor next to the fire in the front office. And they dragged that man out of the building to save him, to get him medical attention. When they got him out of the building, though, they realized quickly that this wasn't just going to be a fire call. This was going to be a police call, because the man was not just unconscious from smoke inhalation or something. The man had been smashed in the head. It looked like with an axe or maybe a metal bar. And amazingly, when the firefighters got there, the man was still alive. But as they got the EMTs starting to work on him and trying to save him, it turns out he only lived for a few more minutes before he passed away. Meanwhile, the firefighters pushed further into the burning office. And then in an inside room, they found yet another fire, a second fire, same MO as the fire in the front room. It was another pile of books and papers that had been sort of hastily piled up and then set on fire. So it's a paper fire. It's really smoky. It's making it very hard to see what's going on. But these are professional firefighters. They get both of these fires in this legal office under control. And as they push further into the office, in that back room in the office with the second fire, they find two more people. Laying on the ground, it's two women. And again, awfully, these are not people who have just been incapacitated by the fire or the smoke. These women have also been violently attacked. One of the women is dead. She has been beaten all over her body, and she has had her throat slit with a large knife or a machete. The second woman has also been beaten, like the man in the front office. She has been smashed in the head. But when the firefighters get to her, they find that she is still breathing. It seems like a miracle. They get her out of the burning building. They get her out to the paramedics. The paramedics work feverishly to try to save her life. But like the man in the front room who had been hit with the axe, she is also too badly injured to survive. And the EMTs work to save her for more than half an hour before she also dies on the scene. So I told you, it's just a terrible, terrible crime. This happened at a small law office in the summer of 2016, June 2016. It happened in Madrid, in a fashionable neighborhood in Madrid, in Spain. And it made national news in that country, as you would expect. This was just a brutal, brutal, violent triple murder at a legal office. You know, and the weapons were terrible, with an axe and a machete and three people killed, then the crime scene set on fire to cover the murderer's tracks. It was just absolutely horrific. But they got the guy. Investigators in Spain ended up picking up his trail, in part because of the lid of a water bottle that he left behind at the scene. They trailed him as he fled Spain. He went first to Germany, where he had previously lived, and then he fled from Germany to South America. He went to Venezuela. And when the Spanish investigators trailed him to Venezuela, Spain's government asked Venezuela to extradite him, to send him back to Spain to face trial for this horrific triple murder in this law office in Madrid. And Venezuela said they would not do that. As a matter of policy, they do not extradite people to face trial in other countries. But they do allow people to face trial in their country for crimes allegedly committed elsewhere, for crimes committed outside their borders. And so with the evidence from the law office murders and fires, with the evidence that let these Spanish prosecutors and investigators track this killer all across the globe, as he led them on a chase on two different continents, in Venezuela, they put the guy on trial. And he was convicted of this brutal triple murder. He got 30 years in prison. And Donald Trump just set him free. Trump sprung him from prison and flew him to the United States. This is the guy in the second row, that this is him. This is Trump flying him back to the United States. He flew him back to the U.S. and then he just let him go. In San Antonio, the New York Times cited a source saying that they believe after he was sprung and set loose in San Antonio, the man reportedly made his way back to Florida for some reason. He's apparently on the streets of Orlando right now. Convicted triple murderer, the axe and machete guy, who was serving a 30-year prison sentence for that triple murder, Donald Trump set him free. Thank you, Trump administration. Thank you, President Donald Trump, for being so tough on crime. The triple murderer guy, convicted triple murderer guy, was set free to roam the streets of Orlando as part of Donald Trump's botched El Salvador prison thing. You may recall Trump randomly declared that we had been invaded by Venezuela, remember? And because of this insane pretext that we were at war with Venezuela because Venezuela invaded us, Trump said that justified us using the Alien Enemies Act, justified us using military force and tactics against people on U.S. soil, which specifically in this case meant sending people to a foreign prison, effectively a concentration camp, because at this prison they afforded people no hearing, no legal process whatsoever, no way to ever get out. Trump's attitude in this whole gambit was, you know, just call it war. Call them alien enemies. Call it war. Say this is a military action. And that means you can do anything you want. In the humiliating collapse of that bizarre, pornographically cinematic, transparently pretextual gambit, Trump ultimately had to get everybody out of that foreign prison that he had sent them to. But in so doing, he couldn't just admit that he had done something transparently illegal and extra-constitutional and patently ridiculous that was never, ever going to survive scrutiny by the courts. He had to make it somehow look like he was winning, that this wasn't just a collapse of a bizarre, transparently pretextual, botched political gambit. This was somehow a win for Donald Trump. This was something he meant to do all along. And so the people who he sent, the men he sent to that foreign prison in El Salvador, they all got sent to Venezuela to be set free. And then Venezuela sent the United States people that it was holding in its prisons, including some random innocent Americans being held for essentially no reason by Venezuela's bizarre authoritarian government, but also a convicted triple murderer who used an axe and a machete to butcher his way through a Madrid law office before setting it on fire to cover his tracks. Trump got him freed, too, and then just let him go inside the United States, where he roams free tonight.
Yeah. I guess this is a case where Venezuela is really not sending us their best. This guy happened to be American. That was Rachel Maddow on MSNBC on Monday night. I told you it was a harrowing story, a grisly story, in fact. She told a few more in a similar vein about the prisoner with a very long rap sheet here in the U.S. who has suddenly come up with a story regarding claims about some years ago crimes that he claims to have been witnessed by the El Salvadoran father living in Maryland, Kilmar Abrego Garcia, who the Trump administration admits they accidentally sent to a prison in El Salvador despite a court order that he should not be deported there. And the fact that the Trump administration has now changed the rules at the Bureau of Prisons to allow for the transfer of a convicted child sex trafficker, Jeffrey Epstein's accomplice and Donald Trump's old friend, Ghislaine Maxwell, to a minimum security prison, a so-called club-fed prison in recent weeks as pressure grows on the administration, including from his own MAGA supporters for his DOJ to release the Epstein files that Trump is in. But Maddow's point, and mine for the moment, is that no, Donald Trump does not care about law and order or the rule of law or being tough on crime. He does not give a damn about it. He has not said one word about 200 shots being fired into the CDC headquarters in Atlanta. He has not called for the National Guard to be deployed to states like Georgia or Texas, despite mass shootings in both over recent days. But after deploying U.S. troops here in Los Angeles to sit around and do absolutely nothing while Trump pretended they were here to quell violent protests, they weren't. The protests were not violent. They were very small. Trump has now announced that he is deploying more U.S. troops, members of the National Guard, to yet another city that happens to have a black female mayor. This time, it's Washington, D.C. And though it likely goes without saying, just a reminder here that if Barack Obama or Joe Biden had deployed U.S. troops on American streets against American citizens, I cannot even imagine the number of bullets that would be flying right now against the American government at this point. But apparently, Trump supporters, they're just fine with big government tyranny so long as it is by a big government tyrant that they voted for. On Monday, during his announcement about deploying U.S. troops to D.C., something he said he wasn't allowed to do, by the way, during the January 6, 2021 insurrection by his supporters at the U.S. Capitol, Trump, who is a 34-time convicted felon himself, stood at the podium with a bunch of other administration miscreants and law violators to announce that he was deploying the troops to D.C., where the violent crime rate is at a 30-year low and has fallen 26% since last year alone, and vowing that other cities are next.
We have other cities that are very bad. New York has a problem. And then you have, of course, Baltimore and Oakland. We don't even mention that anymore. They're so far gone. And this will go further. We're starting very strongly with D.C., and we're going to clean it up real quick, very quickly, as they say.
Really? Is that what they say? Again, notice he mentioned democratically controlled states and cities there. Nothing about deploying troops to, Georgia, where the CDC is now littered with 150 windows shattered by bullets, or where an active duty soldier shot up Fort Stewart last week, or Austin, Texas, where a gunman killed three outside of a Target store on Monday, because none of this is actually about fighting crime or the rule of law. None of it. It is about authoritarian control by a very small man who is willing to let triple axe murderers run free in the United States if it might help him politically. In an exclusive from the Washington Post on Tuesday morning, the paper reports that the Trump administration is evaluating plans that would establish a so-called domestic civil disturbance quick reaction force, composed of hundreds of National Guard troops tasked with rapidly deploying into American cities, facing protests or other unrest, according to internal Pentagon documents that have been reviewed by the Washington Post. The plan calls for 600 troops to be on standby at all times, day and night, so that they can deploy in as little as 1 hour, according to the documents. They would be split into two groups of 300 and stationed at military bases in Alabama and Arizona, with purview of regions east and west of the Mississippi River, respectively. The 300 troops in each of the two headquarters locations would be outfitted with weapons and riot gear, the documents say. The first 100 would be ready to move within an hour, with the second and third waves ready to move within 2 and 12 hours' notice, according to the documents, or all being immediately deployed when placed on high alert. Cost projections outlined in the document indicate that such a mission, if the proposal is adopted, could stretch into the hundreds of millions of dollars should military aircraft and air crews also be required to be ready around the clock. The proposal, which has not been previously reported, represents another potential expansion of Donald Trump's willingness to employ the armed forces on American soil. The documents marked pre-decisional are comprehensive. They bear timestamps as recently as late July and early August, so this is all being done right now. Pentagon spokesperson said in a statement to the Post, quote, "The Department of Defense's planning is a planning organization and routinely reviews how the department would respond to a variety of contingencies around the globe. We will not discuss these plans through leaked documents, pre-decisional or otherwise," the spokesperson said. In addition to National Guard troops, Trump has already deployed U.S. Marines out here to Los Angeles for no actual reason. not to control crime or even unrest. This was just a month or two ago when there were civil protests in response to his unlawful immigrant roundups in Los Angeles and around the area. And during his comments on Monday announcing his deployment of National Guard troops to D.C., Trump threatened that he would have no problem deploying other members of the U.S. military, active duty combat troops, if he felt like it, despite prohibitions against their use in domestic law enforcement in both the Posse Comitatus Act and the U.S. Constitution itself. And so, of course, he had to lie about it when he did so.
And we will bring in the military if it's needed, by the way. We're going to have National Guard. But Pete Hegseth will tell you about it. We will bring in the military if needed. People say, oh, that's so terrible. He's going to bring in. It's been used many times over the years.
No, it hasn't been used many times over the years, as Trump claimed on Monday. U.S. presidents have exceedingly rarely used military troops in domestic cities. And when they have, it has been usually to do things like enforce the law, to enforce civil rights laws in states where governors were defying federal law, like during the school desegregation in the 1960s. Or in response to an extraordinary emergency like a wildfire or 9/11, etc. Not routine crimes of the kind that Trump is pretending to be worried about. Even while he is letting axe murderers run free. So none of that is true that he said. And you should know that. This is not about actual crime. Not in any way, shape, or form. It is about control. It is about authoritarian control. It has nothing to do with actual law and order, as he is pretending. It is about authoritarian control, not the rule of law. That's what all of this is about. Don't be fooled. But do be forewarned. Trump is saying he is going to do it. He is telling us he is going to do it. His Pentagon is drawing up plans for it. He will do it. Don't be surprised when he does, though do be prepared, whatever that might mean. And he is already testing the waters of how this will work, how it will look in cities where he thinks it'll be the easiest, in cities controlled by Democrats. And so far, apparently, only cities with black female mayors who he thinks are lesser than him. It's about asserting his authoritarian control, or trying to, because he is a very small man who needs a very big military with very big guns to make up for his petty, tyrannical smallness and cowardice. But it is not about crime or law and order. Just ask the triple axe murderer who is now roaming free in Florida, thanks to the great negotiator, Donald Trump, who was able to negotiate his freedom after being convicted of a triple murder. It's not about law and order. It's about control, authoritarian control by an authoritarian. And it's also about creating still more distractions from the fact that Donald Trump, after promising for years to release the Epstein files, will not release the Epstein files because he is in the Epstein files. More on that and other distractions straight ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Two nights tonight, I've waited for, because you're not a baby. You turned into the prettiest girl I've ever seen. Happy
back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. It's bad enough we had to run that story on that axe murderer, and now I'm running Happy Birthday, Sweet 16.
Ick, ick, ick.
Song that never actually occurred to me when I was younger was kind of gross.
Yeah. Super creepy.
But it really is. Welcome back. Did I say welcome back to the Bradcast?
You just did.
Okay. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com with my delightful sidekick, Desi Doyen, by my side, grossed out as I am.
Oh.
A federal judge. So you know what we're talking about here, of course. That's why we're playing. A federal judge on Monday denied the Justice Department's request to unseal grand jury materials in Ghislaine Maxwell's criminal case. In his 31-page ruling, U.S. District Judge Paul Engelmeyer says that the grand jury materials do not identify anyone other than the sex trafficker criminals Jeffrey Epstein or Ghislaine Maxwell as having had sexual contact with a minor in these transcripts. The DOJ request had come as supporters of President Donald Trump have pushed for more disclosures related to Maxwell and her co-conspirator Jeffrey Epstein, the deceased financier and accused sex trafficker. Donald Trump had directed Attorney General Pam Bondi last month to release, quote, any and all pertinent grand jury testimony in the Epstein case, that after previously promising to release the actual, you know, files, the Epstein files, the evidence, etc., that is being held by the DOJ and the FBI and does not require a federal judge's permission to be released. Before Donald Trump, for some reason, changed his mind, apparently after learning that, yes, he was in those files repeatedly as Jeffrey Epstein's best friend for more than 10 years. The judge noted that the government's evidence at Maxwell's weeks-long trial, public trial, included the testimony of women who were sexually abused as girls by Epstein and Maxwell, people who worked for Epstein and Maxwell, and law enforcement officials. Some of the evidence included photos and items collected from Epstein's residences, flight logs, and an address book. The evidence before the grand juries, on the other hand, was presented on a single day. Quote, on that day, it heard testimony from one person, wrote the judge, a law enforcement agent who, acting as a summary witness, testified to information obtained in the government's investigation to support the charges in the specific proposed indictment against Maxwell. The judge said that the agent was, quote, responding to tightly structured questions from an assistant U.S. attorney. He described the testimony as, quote, garden variety summary testimony. The government's, quote, entire premise that the Maxwell grand jury materials would bring to light meaningful new information about Epstein's and Maxwell's crimes or the government's investigation into them is demonstrably false, Judge Engelmeyer wrote in his ruling. He said, quote, the materials do not identify any person other than Epstein and Maxwell as having had sexual contact with a minor. They do not discuss or identify any client of Epstein's or Maxwell's. They do not reveal any heretofore unknown means or methods of Epstein's or Maxwell's crimes. They do not reveal new venues at which their crimes occurred. They do not reveal new sources of their wealth. They do not explore the circumstances of Epstein's death. They do not reveal the path of the government's investigation. Insofar as the motion to unseal implies that the grand jury materials are an untapped mine load of undisclosed information about Epstein or Maxwell or Confederates, they definitively are not that, said the judge. And of course, what the judge was saying was stuff that the DOJ knew because it was the DOJ who had brought this this indictment and led this grand jury procedure. So they knew what was in this transcript, and they knew none of it was what they have been pretending it to be.
In other words, the Trump Justice Department knew what is not in the grand jury
Correct.
Materials, which is why they wanted that to be released.
Correct. Judge Engelmeyer went on to say that people who believed that the grand jury documents would reveal new information, quote, would come away feeling disappointed and misled, unquote, and that the only argument he could see for releasing the documents is to expose the government for trying to mislead the public. He wrote, quote, the one colorable argument under that doctrine for unsealing in this case, in fact, is that doing so would expose as disingenuous the government's public explanations for moving to unseal. A member of the public, appreciating that the Maxwell grand jury materials do not contribute anything to public knowledge, might conclude that the government's motion for their unsealing was aimed not at, quote, transparency, but at diversion, aimed not at full disclosure, but at the illusion of such, wrote Judge Engelmeyer. In his ruling, the judge said that the government's submissions failed to prove its claim and that the grand jury material, quote, contained undisclosed information of significant historical or public interest. Contained no such information, but that the with only one minor exception, the evidence from the Maxwell grand juries is already a matter of public record. A member of the public familiar with the Maxwell trial itself, who reviewed the grand jury materials that the DOJ proposed to unseal, quote, would thus learn next to nothing new, the judge said, adding, quote, there is no there. Could this judge be any clearer about all of this? He continued by saying that the materials do not discuss or identify any client of Epstein's or Maxwell's, do not reveal any information heretofore unknown, etc., etc. A similar DOJ request to unseal records in the case against Epstein is pending before a different judge. A third request to unseal grand jury documents relating to the original case against Epstein in Florida back in 2005 was already denied by another judge last month. And all of those requests for grand jury documents from judges who are barred from releasing them, except for the most extraordinary circumstances, which this case obviously did not reach, is by way of giving a middle finger to Trump's own supporters and others who want to see the files and evidence that the DOJ could release today if they wanted to. All of this grand jury transcript nonsense is meant to distract from all of that, from the fact that Donald Trump could order all of this stuff released immediately by his own Department of Justice. It's all meant to distract from the fact that after promising to release those files when he ran for president, he won't release them now that he's president, because, yes, he is implicated in those crimes along with his longtime close friends and child molesters, Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell. Just thought I'd mention that, since clearly Donald Trump would prefer that I did not. And finally, for now, Texas state lawmakers are still breaking quorum, even as we speak, of the Texas legislature, the Texas House of Representatives, in order to prevent the mid-decade redistricting of the Lone Star State as demanded by Donald Trump and as ordered by Texas Republican Governor Greg Abbott for a special session of the state legislature in order to steal 5 U.S. House seats from Democrats in advance of next year's midterm elections.
It is a straight-up authoritarian power grab.
And Republicans are doing it because they know they are likely to lose their U.S. House majority next year if they don't rig the election in advance by drawing new maps. On Monday, the state's criminally indicted attorney general and U.S. Senate candidate Ken Paxton asked the Texas Supreme Court to expel 13 of the state House Democratic representatives who fled the state in order to break quorum, which is allowed by the Texas Constitution, though the Texas High Court is entirely Republican. It's made up of 6 of its 9 members are appointed by Governor Abbott himself. Despite all that, it seems like unlikely. We'll see. But it seems unlikely that they would go along with the scheme to expel 13 members for blocking a quorum and then somehow allow a special session to proceed anyway with a lower number of members needed to make up the two-third majority that is required in the Texas Constitution to hold a session at all. But we will see. As you know, by now, Democratic governors in blue states like California have vowed to answer Texas if they move forward with this, with their own redistricting schemes before next year. And now Greg Abbott of Texas is threatening to go even further to undermine American democracy if California dares to play by the same rules as Texas.
But I'll tell you this, if California thinks they're going to move their needle to the extreme and eliminate five Republican members of the United States Congress there, Texas is not going to do five. We'll add 10 more Republican seats using the same procedure they're using in California. We have more Democrat seats that can turn into Republican seats than they have Republican seats in California that they can turn into Democrat seats.
Yes, so God forbid California moves their needle to the extreme. We'd hate to see that, wouldn't we, Texas Republican Governor Greg Abbott? We hate to see extremists controlling the government. Am I right, Greg? Holy mackerel. For the record, polling shows that most Americans oppose the type of partisan gerrymandering that that Texas is now trying to do, has already done it. Their maps are already gerrymandered. Out here in California, we have an independent citizens redistricting commission that does it.
Yeah, so when you hear Republicans say, oh, California's gerrymandered, they are flat out lying. The districts in California are set by an independent districting commission.
Which is why, if we want to change them out here, as Governor Gavin Newsom has been calling for to do in response to what Texas is doing, we actually have to hold a special election in November in order to change the Constitution to briefly waive the independent citizens commission that currently creates the U.S. House maps here in California. So Americans oppose this sort of thing. Nonetheless, under pressure from Donald Trump, the GOP, as Daily Kos's Walter Eininkel argued, continues its pattern of ignoring the will of the people, plowing ahead to consolidate minority rule. Meanwhile, on Tuesday, the state's top three elected officials, Governor Greg Abbott, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, and State House Speaker Dustin Burrows said that the legislature will now adjourn its current special session on Friday, and the governor will immediately call another special session with an agenda that could include even more farther right Republican items. Special sessions, by law, may only last in Texas up to 30 days, though the governor can call another one thereafter and another one thereafter as needed. Lawmakers are poised then to finish the current special session without passing any new laws, with House Democrats out of the state, meaning they can't do anything, really, in Austin right now. The legislative casualties include legislation in response to the deadly Central Texas flooding over the 4th of July weekend. Democrats accused Republicans of playing politics by pushing the redistricting first instead of focusing on the much-needed flood response. So basically, while Democrats are holding up a session from happening at all, Republicans are specifically preventing relief for that terrible flooding that killed at least 135 people on July 4th, including a whole bunch of children on the banks of the Guadalupe River. Speaking on the House floor on Tuesday morning in Texas, in Austin, the House Speaker said the chamber will now reconvene on Friday to end the session if a quorum is not present. And Lieutenant Governor Patrick, who presides over the Senate, said that he would follow suit in the upper chamber, predicting the cycle would, quote, continue in perpetuity until Democrats return. So the Texas standoff continues. Thanks in no small part to brave Democratic lawmakers fighting for democracy for the entire country right now. As to the entire planet, well, that's a separate story for which Desi Doyen will join us next for our latest Green News Report. That's straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to The Bradcast.
Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is serving you. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you.
Welcome back. Maybe the least grotesque segment of today's broadcast, and yet it nonetheless includes Desi Doyen and our latest Green News Report.
Fairgoers first kind of huddling in tents before being forced to wade across flooded parking lots and fields to get to their cars.
Extreme flash flooding cancels last day of Wisconsin State Fair. July 2025 was the third hottest July ever recorded. Plus,
we have to marshal all of our resources, all of our focus on going to the moon.
Trump administration slashes U.S. renewable energy at home, but plans to put a nuclear plant on the moon.
All of those stories straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We have another wildfire heading toward L.A. Have you heard about that? Oh, the smoke is so thick, some of the ICE agents are wearing two masks. You know what?
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, the summer of floods continues to continue to continue, it seems.
Yes, unfortunately, on Sunday, torrential rainfall and flash flooding canceled the final day of the Wisconsin State Fair near Milwaukee as multiple rivers surged to record-high flooding levels. One rain gauge measured more than 14 inches of rain in 24 hours,
what?
Which would shatter a state rainfall record if confirmed. Intense storms across several Midwest states closed roadways, forced motorists to abandon their vehicles and cut power to tens of thousands.
Totally normal. Don't worry about a thing.
Around the world, more extreme heat and storms as well. In Japan, a few days after setting a new national all-time heat record, the nation was hit by an intense storm that had stalled for a week over Japan's southern island. More than 14 inches of rain fell there in just 6 hours.
What?
Generating severe, deadly flooding and landslides, forcing the evacuation of millions of residents and heavily damaging infrastructure. Scientists warn that extreme rainfall events like this are becoming more frequent in Japan and around the world due to man-made climate change driven by the burning of fossil fuels. A prolonged heat wave is gripping parts of Europe. It has sent temperatures soaring. Turkey set a new all-time national heat record just shy of 123 degrees Fahrenheit late last week. The heat is fueling wildfires, including a massive, deadly wildfire in the south of France that officials called, quote, a catastrophe on an unprecedented scale. Several nuclear power plants in both France and Switzerland were forced to shut down temporarily due to rising temperatures in the rivers used to cool the reactors. And in northern France, a nuclear plant had to shut down on Monday after a swarm of jellyfish clogged pumps used to cool the reactors due to an ocean heat wave that caused jellyfish populations to surge.
So climate change is even causing surging jellyfish now.
Yes.
Great.
In science, July 2025 was the third hottest July on record globally since record keeping began in the mid-1800s, and Europe is the fastest warming continent, according to Europe's climate service, Copernicus. The report also found that renewable energy generation also reached new all-time highs across the continent.
That's good, but I guess it's not helping.
Not enough. But in the U.S., it's more wanton destruction of taxpayer dollars and world-leading scientific research.
Great.
NPR reports that the Trump administration has ordered NASA to destroy two major satellite missions that measure carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. The data is used for climate monitoring, but also by the Department of Agriculture and farmers to track plant growth, drought conditions, and more. Taxpayers paid $750 million to build those satellites. They cost only $15 million a year to operate, but one of them is going to be burned up in the atmosphere.
Well, how's that for government efficiency?
Finally, the Trump administration has slashed billions in funding and incentives for clean energy and manufacturing in the U.S. that would have helped homeowners and businesses save money on energy. But Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy, who is now also interim NASA administrator, instead plans to spend billions for the U.S. to be the first nation to build a nuclear reactor on the moon. While NASA has discussed building a small nuclear reactor to power a lunar base, Duffy is accelerating it, characterizing it as a race with China. Former Washington State Governor Jay Inslee, in an interview with Midas Touch, was not impressed.
It'd be nice if our elected officials thought about getting power to our homes on Earth, not just the moon. It has always astounded me about Trump. He wants to say he wants to be dominant in energy, but the first thing he wants to do is to basically take three of the most prominent energy generating sources and make them illegal in the United States. Look, if you need more energy, the dumbest thing to do is to disallow access to wind, solar, and advanced batteries.
Well, that may be dumb, but we're going back to the moon and building nukes on it. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. And let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars.
Well, that's starting to sound nice right around now. Thank
yes,
you very
please.
Much.
Take me to the moon.
Yes, and beyond. Thank you very much, Desi Doyen. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other since the beginning of time, you can download them for free at bradblog.com. The reason you can do that, the reason it's always free, is thanks to those of you who go to bradblog.com, hit a donate button, to help keep us on your public airwaves with a donation of any amount you can afford, whether it's one time or preferred, a monthly subscription of any amount you can afford to help us continue for as long as we can into the future, all the way to the moon. Drop me email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. You can find me on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, at The Brad Blog. You can find Desi Doyen there as well.
At Green News Report.
At Green News Report. And we will see you there at all of the above. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world. You.